Take your time getting set up. Our third case is number 22-12335, TaxiNet Corporation et al. Versus Santiago León. Mr. King, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. The central issue in this case is whether the jury is entitled to believe the defendant, Santiago León, when he takes the stand and over the course of 2 days of trial testimony, testifies seven different times that the value of a concession granted by the government of Mexico City was worth $2.4 billion, and that that was a conservative estimate.
Let me stop you there for a second. Yes. Let me assume that that's correct and that you're right on that point. For purposes of my question,
okay,
what is the theory of damages for unjust enrichment that you pursued below and are asserting on appeal? Because there are different ways of calculating damages for unjust enrichment under Florida law, right?
Yes, yes, that is.
So tell me the theory that you are, the theory you presented below to the jury and the theory that you are asserting on appeal.
The value of the services to the party unjustly enriched, that was the jury instruction. And that is from really many cases, but for our purposes, the Kane case, where that theory allows you to recover your contribution to the result achieved. The result achieved was the concession. The result achieved and the whole purpose of this endeavor and this enterprise was to get a concession to operate TaxiNet's application. So there's nothing wrong with our theory of damages. And the jury did have the standard. The jury did have in the evidence multiple times what the ultimate value of it was.
But how does the ultimate value alone, and I know there was a little bit more to it than that. I mean, there was the fact of the 25% offer and that, but you know, the jury found that the value occurred through September 2015, I guess it was, right? Is that right?
September 25th.
Of 2015.
Yes.
Okay. And the 1.6, the valuation, I guess there were a couple different valuations. There's the Goldman Sachs valuation, which occurs in 2018. So 3 years later, after there's a lot of water under the bridge and other things have happened. And according to Mr. León, I guess, there's the development of an entirely new app. You know, you've got a lot of different things happening. So how do we get from, under Florida law, right, where we have to show what the value of that is, how do we get from that to the period of time that the jury found that the value was bestowed?
Well, so I'll start with the case law, which all we need is a rational basis by the jury. And I think that you mentioned the jury verdict form had put a time range. But under the Rule 50 analysis, we're not supposed to look at the verdict form. We're just supposed to look at the evidence at trial. And so I think to the last part of Your Honor's question is, we have a $2.4 billion valuation that's done 2018, and we're looking at a benefit that was conferred in the 2015 range. But I think that there was a lot of evidence in support of us on that issue for the very reason that the Goldman Sachs valuation in 2018 was for the concession that was granted. And our theory of the case was the concession was granted in September of 2015. Our work on this continues all the way through October. There was evidence of the declaration of need, which was written by TaxiNet and which described TaxiNet's application. And so, and this was a 10-year concession agreement. So our position was a 2018 valuation is right in the heart of the relevant time period here. And because the agreement had not changed, because the valuation or the concession agreement was struck in 2015, because of tax and its
contribution. But let's talk about this for a second. Let's assume, for example, that in fact the taxi net application at that time when the award was made only worked for 150 to 150 cabs, okay? And it couldn't have worked for the entire, you know, number of cabs that were going to be using it. If that were the case, and changes weren't made to the app, there weren't a new app developed, then looking back in 2018, you wouldn't say that it was worth $2.4 billion or whatever it was that Goldman Sachs said it was worth, because it wouldn't have the ability to be able to be effective for all of those caps, right? I mean, you would agree with that?
I do not agree with that, Judge, for this reason. Goldman Sachs was valuing the concession. The concession, which is an exclusive license, assumes the operation of a working application. If we accept your hypothetical, and we disagree with it, we think that there was evidence in the record, and this was hotly disputed, that TaxiNet's software did work. But if I accept your hypothetical, that would not change the value of the concession. It would put pressure on having to come up with a working application. But our theory of the case was Leon cut us out of this deal. He shouldn't have done it. The TaxiNet application could have gotten up and running with a lot less investment, much faster. And the fact that he had to invest in an application from the ground up was a result of the fact that he didn't know what he was doing. And so I think that we need to separate, or we would like to separate, and we think the evidence supports this, the idea of the concession being an exclusive license. A license has value in of itself apart from the business that's going to operate it. You know, like a liquor license itself has a value unattached to the restaurant or the bar. And this is what was actually valued by Goldman Sachs. So I think that
when the concession was granted, for lack of a better term, when was it supposed to begin?
I don't think that there was a specific date on that. There certainly was pressure that was coming from Leon to get it up and running. But
how could a concession be granted without knowing a start date?
You're right. There was a concession agreement, and I don't know if that was one of the specific terms of it. I don't know what the time frame was for getting this up and running. We do know that the application that ultimately came in, that Leon took a long time to develop, that didn't get implemented until 2018, and the concession was still very much in place and still had its value. So, you know, our position is, look, this was what the trial was about. This was one of the central issues for the jury to decide, and we think it was a classic jury question. Did TaxiNet's application work? There was competing evidence about that. And
let me ask you a question about the evidence.
Yes.
The district court found that there was no evidence to provide a market value for the business plan, the know-how, and the technology that TaxiNet purportedly provided to Leon.
Right.
Separate and apart from the concession.
Yes.
Does that correctly reflect the record?
Well, I would say that no one sort of put a value on the TaxiNet application. I would agree with that. But there was certainly evidence of, the business that was backing that. But our theory of damages was entirely or substantially based on the valuation of the concession and our percentage contribution to it. And that is a valid...
I understand that that's your theory of damages. My question is if, speaking only for myself, if we disagree with that as the theory of damages, what corpus of evidence is there as to the know-how?
the know-how.
Or did the district court get it right that there is none?
That is an alternative theory of damages. I believe there was testimony about the value of the tax in application because it did have a history going up, going forward, and its application. And we do know that Leon tried to buy the tax net application after he cut them out of the deal. So I think that there was probably evidence that the services itself and the business and the know-how, that could have been valued. But ultimately, that was not our theory of damages. And it didn't have to be our theory of damages. We think that it was appropriate to say, look, we want a percentage of what we contributed, just like the Kane case and just like other cases.
So what do we do with cases like Alvarez that, you know, talk about it's entirely speculative. It seems seems really close to being on point here to say we get a percentage of what it's ultimately worth or what someone has calculated it to be ultimately worth based on contributions early in time.
Yes. Alvarez, I think, was fact-driven. This was a boxer. He could have broken his neck in the next fight and his career's over.
Let's assume just for purposes of the question that the app only worked for 150 to 150 taxis, that no further app was created to correct this problem. Why isn't that really similar to the boxer having broken his neck?
Well, I think that there's other distinctions, and that's a good point, Your Honor. Probably the biggest distinction was the defendant in Alvarez didn't sit on the stand and say, I'm going to win X number of fights and I'm going to make $50 million over my career. In this case, we did have that admission. But really, it was ultimately a failure of evidence in this case. The concession and the license agreement in this case could be independently valued. And to answer your question, if it was a situation where we don't have a business, they could have sold the concession, or they could have negotiated a deal to still obtain value out of it. So it wouldn't have been the end of the day for our theory of the case. Now we'd ask. Well, I'll save my time for the rest of it.
I'll ask you one more question, Mr. King. Part of your argument for defending, and I'll ask Mr. Cantero the reverse question. Part of your argument for defending the jury verdict is that the Goldman Sachs report should have been admitted.
Yes.
You can't make that argument to defend the jury verdict, right? Because the jury never saw the report itself. And if the evidence was excluded, you can't defend the jury verdict on evidence that was never presented. I understand making that argument in the context of your argument that at worst, you get a new trial. But you can't defend a jury verdict on evidence that was never presented and was excluded, right?
Yes, our argument is that the $2.4 billion valuation was in evidence.
I get that based on the testimony of Mr. Leon, et cetera. I get that. But the argument that the report should have been admitted, that's a new trial argument. That's not a defense of sufficiency of the verdict argument, right?
I think under Reeves, we're looking at the admissible evidence. I think the court can consider, looking at the entire record, evidence that should have come in its Rule 50B analysis.
Really?
Yes, Judge.
So you mean that in a case involving sufficiency of a verdict, the court on appeal takes a look at evidence that was excluded and never presented?
Well, it was presented. It was moved into evidence. But it
was excluded. The jury never saw it.
That's right, Judge.
We look at it, though?
My understanding of Reeves and my reading of Reeves is that admissible evidence is what counts on the Rule 50B analysis. But our
potentially admissible or like admissible, like it was admitted and it was admissible?
I would say an exhibit that you move into evidence, the court excludes it, he should have admitted it.
And the jury never sees it.
The jury never sees it.
We can take that into account.
Yes.
Woo.
Reeves.
Wow.
But our position is we don't need to go there because the valuation was in there.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. King. Mr. Cantero.
Let me see if I can still button this jacket. May it please the court, Raul Cantero, along with my colleague, Veronica Gordon, and co-counsel, Harry Payton, for Santiago León. I know Judge Jordan alluded to a question for me, so, Your Honor, what's your question?
The reverse of the question I asked Mr. King, which is, in part, the district court said that Mr. León's testimony about the valuation was based on hearsay. And my question is, so what?
That's true.
If evidence is admitted, right, and it turns out that the evidence was improperly admitted, you can take that into account in granting a new trial, but not in determining sufficiency of the verdict, right?
That's right. Judge Moreno articulated several other bases.
Oh, no, I get that, and I want to hear about those, but I'm just saying you can't just say, for example, this unobjected to testimony was hearsay, therefore I'm cutting it out of the sufficiency analysis.
I understand that, but the valuation itself, the testimony about the valuation, does not go to the proper measure of damages.
Right, that's a different argument. Okay, go ahead.
I'm agreeing with you on that, but it doesn't go to the proper measure. And to answer your first question, Judge, at the beginning of this argument, which is what is the measure of damages? They tried this case below, and they have litigated this case on appeal as a breach of contract case. That was their measure of damages. Even though Judge Moreno had granted summary judgment on the breach of joint venture agreement, those are the damages that they sought below, and those are the damages they seek below. What else is there when you say, and Mr. Noboa, the CEO of TaxiNet, in his direct testimony, testified and on cross too, many, many times, not just once, not just twice, not just three times, that what he wanted was 60% of $2 billion, 60% of Lusad, 60% of the $2.4 million that we're seeking from the government of Mexico. Where does that 60% come from? From his oral agreement that he said he had, which was unenforceable under the statute of frauds. The real measure of damages, and the measure they did not use, even though they could have, was what is the value of the services that TaxiNet provided to Mr. León. Mr. León was the defendant, not Lusad. Mr. León was the defendant. We argue that there was no benefit at all to him. And that's another basis for affirmance. But the issue is, what is the value of the services provided to Mr. León? Now, they could have said, they could have come in and brought an expert and said, what Icreon spent in developing this app, which is, as Judge Rosenbaum alluded to, insufficient, inappropriate, and totally unready for the Mexico market. But such as it is, this is what cost to develop this application. This is what somebody would have spent to answer Judge Manasco's question, in developing a business plan, developing the know-how, developing the technology that we get, whatever we gave you. There was no evidence whatsoever, by the way, of any know-how that they provided us or the value of anything. That's not what they presented. Why? We don't know, but I assume it's because it would have been minuscule compared to seeking $2.4 billion, which has nothing to do with any value of what they were giving. And that's, Your Honor, Judge Jordan, what Judge Moreno alluded to in the judgment. And I will, let me just show you some of the parts.
But here's the part that partially concerns me. On page 9 of his order, Judge Moreno twice said that the valuation is based on hearsay and is not in evidence. That's just wrong.
Yes, but taking that away, let's assume the valuation is in evidence. He also says, beginning on page 2, throughout the trial, plaintiff asserted entitlement to 60% of a $2.4 billion valuation done 3 years after it conferred a benefit on León. This percentage is not related to the value of the service or benefit TaxiNet purportedly conferred on Leon, but is instead based on discussions never finalized concerning TaxiNet's potential ownership interest in a future company. He could have ended it there and signed it, because that's all you need to say. And that's all you need to look at to affirm the judgment. Because again, the entire basis of their argument and of their case, the theory of the case, was based on breach of contract damages. And if they get anything based on the $2.4 billion or even the $1.6 billion or the $450 million, all these valuations, then it eviscerates the statute of frauds. Then the statute of frauds means nothing. Why? Because if you don't have an oral contract, that's okay. You can just assert an unjust enrichment claim and seek precisely the same damages that you would have in a breach of contract claim. And so it cannot be the case that they can base it on a valuation on breach of contract damages instead of proving at trial what the value of whatever you provided to business plan, know-how, technology. And by the way, that comes from the closing argument. That was their theory at trial. That's what was given, was business plan, know-how, technology. Now they say it's the entire concession, but that's not what they argued at trial. Business plan, know-how, technology, they offered no evidence whatsoever on those, what the value of that was given to them. And by the way, now they say, well, give us a new trial. Well, if you look at their argument on new trial, they don't want a new trial so they can go ahead and tell you, well, what was the value of this flawed plan, this flawed app that we had that you couldn't use. They want a retrial so they can admit the Goldman Sachs valuation. That's what they said. Let us remedy it by actually introducing this valuation, this report, into evidence, which is obviously just as irrelevant on remand as it is now. And to address Judge Rosen.
What do Florida cases generally say with regard to the value of services rendered or obtained when those services later lead to a lucrative contract? How do you go about mechanically trying to figure out or place a value on those services when there's a later contract that can be valued?
Well, Your Honor, for that, I would allude to the Hughes case, which they cite. It's a case from this court. And Hughes is interesting because in Hughes, the plaintiff sought lost profits. They had contracted to be an analyst and consultant for a fund based on mortgage-backed securities. And he did work for the company. The company then cut off relations, didn't pay him anything. And he sought lost profits. And this court said, the district court instructed the jury, you don't get lost profits for that. But he also introduced evidence of the value of his services to the company. But under unjust enrichment, the narrow damages that he would get, and which he proved at trial and was affirmed, was I worked for, 21 months. That equals X number of hours. I think it said 3,300 hours I worked on this. And I would estimate it at $400 an hour. And therefore, I should get $1.3 million. And the jury awarded $1.25 million. And this court said, well, that's close enough. The judge instructed the jury they could not consider lost profits, so we're going to assume they obeyed the judge's order. And $1.25 million is pretty close to $1.3 million. And so we're going to assume that the jury based it on the value that he said his services were worth. So in an unjust enrichment claim, it doesn't matter. They cited the Cain case. Cain was a totally different situation where it was attorneys fighting for fees, and one of the attorneys had filed a charging lien in a contingency fee case and said, I think I should get 50%. I did 50% of the work. And so he gave the judge, the state court judge, I think, gave a percentage, maybe it was federal court, gave a percentage of the ultimate judgment against the defendant. That happens all the time in attorney charging liens where one attorney is replaced by another. That's a totally situation than a nascent company without any business whatsoever that the evidence showed could not use what was brought to them, develop its own app, and ultimately that was valued at a certain amount 3 years later after the app had been put in 1,250 cars and there was a funding to roll it out to 138,000 cars. They had all the funding for that 3 years later. And all of this kind of evidence must be taken in the light most favorable to Mr. Leon because the jury found negligent misrepresentation. It actually found in favor of Mr. Leon that TaxiNet had negligently but misrepresented what was wrong, what was right with this app, and the app would work. First misrepresented, the evidence was he misrepresented that it was working 5,000 cars when there was testimony as 150 cars, like Judge Rosenbaum said. And there were a lot of other problems, with especially scalability, that it wasn't ready for prime time. It wasn't ready to be rolled out or could even work for that many cars, for more than 100 times the cars that even they said were in use in Ecuador. And as early as August of 2015, during these, while we're talking with the government of Mexico City, Mr. Noboa, TaxiNet's CEO, is simultaneously writing to the developer of the app, August 19, saying, we need to talk about the app. There are serious problems with it. That's him talking to his own app designer. So there was plenty of evidence from which the jury did conclude that there were negligent misrepresentations, and therefore, whatever value that app had was certainly not the value of a different app 3 years later that we said was worth $2.4 billion. And by the way, in a case like this, you would assume that the plaintiff would bring evidence showing this is the TaxiNet app, this is the Lucid app, and look at all the similarities. The Lucid app does this and that, and the other thing, same thing as the TaxiNet app. Well, Mr. Noboa, the representative of TaxiNet, conceded on cross-examination that he had never seen the Lucid app, and he had never hired anybody to compare the Lucid app to the TaxiNet app. And so they had no basis whatsoever to be able to say you copied it because they don't know. They never saw it. And so there was no evidence in the record to support any value for TaxiNet whatsoever. For that reason, I think I suggest the court affirm the judgment in full and not remand for a new trial on anything. If the court has no further questions, I'll rest on my brief further arguments.
All right, thank you very much. So same question for you, Mr. King. What do Florida cases say about valuing services provided or services obtained when there is a later lucrative contract?
It's the Kane case, that you can participate in your contribution. Certainly the work that the lawyers in the Kane case did came before the settlement agreement. And after the settlement agreement, they came in and said, We deserve a piece of this because of everything that we did. Without us, you're not settling that case. And they had evidence that was legally sufficient for the court to reason that the lawyers who laid the groundwork for the settlement could get 50%. Now, we think that that's on point with this case.
But in Kane, wasn't there an expert who testified about the value of lawyer services? And didn't the trial court make a concrete finding about the value of that the plaintiff lawyers provided in the form of their legal advice?
That is true, but our position in this case is once we take this $2.4 billion valuation and say that that is in evidence, the jury's charge was to determine what percentage did we contribute to this benefit. this benefit was this incredibly valuable concession agreement. And the jury did have evidence. We didn't have an expert, but there was evidence in the record, contemporaneous evidence about what the parties understood Taxinet was bringing to this deal. The 60% we asked for was because that Taxinet was to be the 60% owner of Lucid. And I think that he had mentioned the Lucid app. The Lucid app originally was to be the Taxinet application. And so that was a measure of what Taxinet could contribute. Later,
that he, Mr. Contero, says that's essentially asking for breach of contract damages, because your contract claim was essentially that there was an agreement whereby you would own a percentage of the company.
Those weren't contract damages, because what we were trying to do and what we actually did achieve in doing with the evidence in the record was to impose liability on Mr. Leon for the value of the benefit conferred. This wasn't a situation where we were enforcing an existing contract. We were suing for unjust enrichment. Now, look, our theory was 60%. We think that's what we contributed. The jury found 12.5%. And we know now, because of the verdict form, although we're not supposed to consider that, that they get that number from Leon's offer. We have a contemporaneous email from Leon saying, you, Taxinet, contributed 25%, so I will give you 25% of this business. That is a rational basis, and that is, we think, compelling evidence for the jury to take that number and use it to compute a proper damages award for unjust enrichment. We would ask the court to reverse the Rule 50 order and to reinstate the jury verdict.
All right, thank you both very much.